From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most important issues facing you and your family. And we do it all from a biblical worldview. So for the next hour, I invite you to sit back and be a part of the conversation with some of our nation's top leaders and newsmakers. Washington Watch starts now.
We want to turn the page. We don't want to turn the clock back and let Marjorie Taylor Greene dictate the schedule and the calendar of what's ahead. We want to turn the page and focus on the pressing issues that everyday Americans care about.
That was House Democrat Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar stating House Democrats would not facilitate Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene's efforts to create more chaos in the House by voting to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson. We're going to talk about that today. And could a ceasefire in Gaza be close?
Our focus right now is on getting a ceasefire and hostages home. That is the most urgent thing. And it's also, I think, what is achievable because the Israelis have put a strong proposal on the table. They demonstrated that they're willing to compromise. And now it's on Hamas.
That was Secretary of State Antony Blinken today in Jordan. Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said regardless of a ceasefire, Israel will go into the southern Gaza city of Rafah.
The idea that we would stop the war before achieving all of its goals is out of the question. We will enter Rafah and eliminate the Hamas battalions there, with or without a deal, in order to achieve total victory.
That was Israeli government spokesman Avi Haiman quoting the prime minister earlier today. Now, in the meantime, here at home, the campus protests have entered a new phase. Students at Columbia University have taken over Hamilton Hall. Now, the students say they will occupy the building until Columbia divests financially from Israel.
What are university officials waiting on? What do they need to see before they stand up to these terrorist sympathizers? And that is exactly what they are.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson with Republican leaders in the House earlier today. Now, here, I got an idea. If they want to get them out, all they need to do is cut off the electricity, the water, and Amazon deliveries. I mean, that would be unbearable hardships for these lefties. All right, we're going to talk about that with Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts in just a moment. And let the lawsuits begin.
We will 100% be standing behind this legislature, behind this attorney general, and behind the Bessie board, because you know what? We do not intend to comply. We are not going to pretend that there is some other form of sexual category other than the one that the Almighty has set forth.
Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry announcing that the state would join with other states in suing the Biden administration over the redefinition of sex in the Title IX educational regulations. The Attorney General for the state of Louisiana, Liz Merle, will join me later here on Washington Watch. And finally, keep your eye on the World Health Organization.
We're unprepared and we're still vulnerable to the same problem. But the good news is, based on the lessons learned, we're building something. But we need to have a binding agreement in order to prevent or to early detect and respond in a better way.
That, of course, was the Secretary General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Ghebreyesus. That was Sunday at the World Economic Forum. Again, scaring people so that they can grab power. New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith joins us with the latest on the WHO's global power grab. And they're going to attempt it next month in Geneva at their 77th annual meeting. We're going to talk about that with Congressman Chris Smith and how you can be a part of stopping it. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there. Be sure and check it out. All right, as we said at the, as we asked at the top of the hour, will there be a ceasefire in Gaza? Well, despite pressure from the Biden administration to accept what they call an extremely generous offer from Israel, Hamas is yet to agree. Now, regardless of the ceasefire, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will not stop the coming military action in Rafah. Now, joining me now to discuss this and much more is Senator Pete Ricketts from Nebraska. He serves on three Senate committees, including the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Ricketts, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on.
So I know you, being on the Foreign Affairs Committee, you're tracking what's happening all over the world. The world's on fire under the Biden policies. Let's talk about the ceasefire negotiations. What do we know? What's the latest?
Well, I think what we ought to be seeing from our administration is more support from Israel with regard to this. Hamas is a terrorist organization that started this war, and Israel is absolutely correct when they say that they need to be destroyed. That will not only be in Israel's interest, but in our interest and the interest of civilization in general. And so we need to be supporting them and not trying to cut them short from achieving that goal. Now, if they decide that this is one of the ways they can get some of those hostages back, obviously we want our hostages back. It's one of the things we don't hear from the administration enough, talking about the Americans that Hamas is still holding. Inexplicably, they don't talk about that. We want to get our hostages back, but we also need to make sure that this organization is destroyed, and then we can start working about how can we create a better future for the Gazans rather than having a terrorist organization rule over them.
When we talk about the future, Israel should they not be in the driver's seat here? I mean, they're the ones that have to live there. They're the ones that endured October the 7th. We see the United States, the Biden administration, pushing this two-state solution as a part of these negotiations. I mean, should that even be a part of this conversation at this point?
Yeah, in my opinion, absolutely not. I mean, this is about destroying a terrorist organization. There's no way that Israel can allow Hamas to continue to exist. Hamas said shortly after October 7th that they would continue these attacks. You know, this is a terrorist organization that killed civilians, brutally raped women, killed little children. I mean, the organizations need to be destroyed and needs to be destroyed as soon as possible. There can be no talk about where we go in the future until this organization is out of the way. And then there'll have to be some sort of discussion about where does Gaza go from here to be able to restore a government that the Israelis can deal with. But it's not Hamas. And so and it's not clear it's the Palestinian Authority either, because they're also very corrupt. So we've got a long ways to go before we talk about where we go afterwards. What we have to focus on is destroying Hamas now.
Saudi Arabia has been a part of these conversations, negotiations. Could they be a part of the long-term governance of Gaza once Hamas is eliminated?
I do think that there's going to be a role for the nations in the Middle East to participate in this, to be able to be a part of how Gaza is rebuilt in a way that will be peaceful and prosperous for its citizens and not be a threat to Israel. Again, I think those conversations can go on behind the scenes right now, but until Hamas is destroyed, it's a moot point, right? That until Hamas is gone, there is not going to be any peace in Gaza.
One other question on this front is that the International Criminal Court has raised the possibility of pursuing Israeli officials for war crimes, for defending their country. I think you've been a part of a group in the Senate speaking into this. What's the latest on this?
Well, what this really demonstrates is the hypocrisy of these international organizations like the ICC. You know, we've had atrocity committed since October 7th, and what they've said is, well, they're looking into Hamas as well. Well, why are you waiting so long to look at Hamas? We have the video evidence from Hamas's own cameras demonstrating the atrocities that they did. So why isn't the ICC working on that first, since we actually have all this stuff? It also would be important to note that we're actually not a member of the ICC, and neither is Israel. And these international organizations are terribly anti-Semitic. This is just, again, one of the ways that the world is trying to attack our ally Israel, and we should do everything we can to block this. Again, it's just hypocrisy at its height that they're talking about holding an ally of ours like Israel account, but not even doing anything about Hamas at this point when we know we've got the evidence for Hamas. So, again, this is something we need to continue to resist. These international organizations are incredibly biased, And it's one of the reasons, for example, why we're not a part of this.
Well, it, in and of itself, it's not significant, but it's yet another talking point for the left. It's something that they can use at the United Nations. And it's another reason why we just don't need to be a part of any of these entities that have repeatedly shown their anti-Semitic holdings and, of course, their hostility toward Israel as a state.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, we need to encourage the Biden administration to do the right thing. I was pleased to see that they've continued to start vetoing some of the bad ideas that have been put in front of the United Nations. But, you know, we skipped a vote on one of those that was against Israel. We should not do that. We should say we are with Israel 100% until this terrorist organization called Hamas is destroyed.
Senator Ricketts, you're a former governor, state of Nebraska. What do you have to say about what's happening on these college campuses across the country?
Well, of course, you know, everybody's got their free speech rights, and we want them to have that. But it also means, you know, in our country, you can exercise your rights, but you can't infringe upon anybody else's rights. And so to the students who are actually infringing upon other students' rights, these universities need to take a hard stance. I think that if it's not too much to say, hey, if you're going to continue to break our rules and infringe upon other students who are trying to get their studies done, you're going to be expelled. And if you're going to break the law, we're going to call the police in. I mean, this is what needs to happen. I think if you look at places like in Florida, where you have a strong governor who's issuing that statement, you don't see the kind of problems you're seeing in some of these kind of what we call elite Ivy League colleges that are, you know, very liberal. In fact, I was watching some of the news reports saying that in part of the problem is actually the faculty who has indoctrinated these students and is actually encouraging this sort of behavior. Really, we need to remember we can express our freedom of speech, but you cannot interfere with other people's rights.
Agree. 100%. You should have the freedom of speech. We all defend that, or we should defend it, but there's a line that crosses. Are you concerned? I know you've been very vocal on your concerns over China. Is there any effort or any evidence, I should say, that foreign actors such as China are funding and fueling some of this unrest on college campuses here in the United States?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. TikTok. If you look at TikTok, despite the fact that if you poll Americans, they broadly support Israel and not Hamas. But if you look on TikTok and look at the pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian content versus the pro-Israel content, the pro-Israel content is outnumbered by the pro-Hamas Palestinian content 50 to 1. If we were going to expect to see it be a normalized curve of, you know, American support, you'd see that it would actually favor Israel by a wide margin. This is just one of the ways that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to sow dissent and influence their, you know, exercise their malign influence on our society. And it's one of the reasons why I voted for the supplemental package that included the requirement that TikTok be sold to an American buyer so we can end this malign Chinese influence on our society. They're laughing all the way, to the bank when they're talking about, like, what we allow them to do in our country, and right, they allow none of it in their country.
Senator, we're up against a break. If you could stick with us, I want to come back, and I want to actually talk about that bill that would require the sale of TikTok and China's response to that, as well as the military aid that was given to Taiwan. China's not too happy about that. We're going to talk about that and more here on Washington Watch when we return from the break. And by the way, I invite you to join us on May the 19th for a Sunday where we will pray and stand with Israel. To find out more about that, text Israel to 67742. All right, stick around. We're coming back with more right after the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, if you'd like to join us on Sunday, May 19th, Pray for and Stand with Israel Sunday, text the word Israel to 67742 and find out how you can be a part of that. All right, I'm going to continue the conversation on China's response to U.S. military aid to Taiwan and more with Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts. He serves on three Senate committees, including the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. Senator Ricketts, thanks for sticking around. Now, before the break, we discussed the response to legislation regarding TikTok. China not very happy about that, but they also threatening retaliation because of the foreign aid that went to Taiwan. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Lin Zhan said yesterday, quote, if the United States clings obstinately to its course, China will take resolute and forceful steps to firmly defend its own security and development interest, end quote. Is this, I mean, how do you take this? Is this a threat?
Well, we've got to remember that the Chinese Communist Party and the People's Republic of China is our chief adversary in the world and an existential threat to this country. Xi Jinping has been very clear. He wants to replace us and create a Chinese world order where he sets the rules about what's going to go on. He's also been very clear that he wants Taiwan part of China again. So we would expect that they are going to have very strong language when we show that we're going to support Taiwan. Now, you know, this government's position is that if Taiwan reunites with the People's Republic of China peacefully, that's one thing, but we absolutely oppose any use of force. So what we're doing is helping Taiwan to be able to create some of the asymmetric defenses they need to deter China from trying to take that island by force. This is frankly in the entire world's interest, because if China were to try to take Taiwan by force, it would lead to a major power war and, of course, have huge impacts because 30% of the world's trade goes through that strait right there. And I've seen some estimates that I think are probably conservative that world GDP would drop by 10% in just the first year of that war. So it's in our interest, it's in Taiwan's interest to deter that war, it's in the world's interest. And it's the only person it's not in the interest of is China. And that's why they're making all this noise. What we need to do is continue to stand strong on our path. Our policies are very clear, and we need to continue to support Taiwan to be able to deter China from trying to take this by force. And that's part of what this package was about.
You know, China's been playing the long game to overtake the United States economically and militarily. America is, under this administration, the policy of this administration, lacking that focus. Where does China stand in their efforts to usurp America on the global stage?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we certainly have people in the administration who understand the threat that's coming from China. Unfortunately, I think if you look at the White House, this is not one of the things that they have made a big priority, right? So when China sends a spy balloon over our country, we see a very ineffectual response from the White House towards this. They have kept the trade, tariffs in place that the Trump administration put in place, but they haven't really taken any steps to go beyond that. They have done some good things with regard to, you know, our allies with Japan and South Korea and establishing a stronger relationship with India, which is all good. But frankly, a lot of that was low-hanging fruit because China's actions have been so bad, they've really driven these allies into a stronger relationship with us and the other folks in the neighborhood. We need to see an administration that's very clear, going to clearly lay down the markers with regard to what our policy is, how we're going to support Taiwan, and let Xi Jinping know that should he step over the line, we'll be there very forcefully to push back against it.
Some of our other policies obviously are eclipsing the concern about China. One of the policies is the Biden administration pushing burdensome emission mandates. They want to require up to 2/3 of new vehicles to be electric in just 8 years. Of course, that is going to make us more reliant upon China in what they produce, in particular in the batteries. You've been very critical of this coming mandate.
Yeah, absolutely. The Biden administration has just produced new rules that require 2/3 of all vehicles sold in the year 2032 to be electric vehicles. And to your point about making us dependent on China, China processes between 60 and 80% of a lot of the rare earth elements and critical minerals we need to make batteries, things like graphite or cobalt or manganese or lithium or whatever you want. And Tony, you may remember a time when we were actually dependent on the Middle East for oil. I certainly do as, being a small kid and what that meant to us and how it handicapped us and hurt us economically. Why on earth would we want to make ourselves dependent on our chief adversary in the world? You know, this is just part of how crazy stupid this administration is. And at the same time they're mandating EVs, they're also attacking American energy, right? They've canceled leases. They've just put out a new clean power plan, which is going to shut down our coal plants, our clean coal plants, and our natural gas. Where do they expect this electricity to come from? I mean, this administration does not think, it doesn't plan. It just, goes after whatever the extreme radical environmentalists want to do. And it's actually undermining our ability to keep the world safe and our country safe.
Well, it certainly helps our adversaries, but it hurts the American family. It's the working families that are going to have to, who's going to be able to saddle up for these expensive electric cars and higher energy costs as a result of eliminating these power plants?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, first of all of our American families are facing Biden inflation right now with his terrible policies and reckless spending. But just think about this. An average EV costs $53,000. A low-income family will spend on average $12,000 for a regular car. If you mandate all these electric vehicles, you're going to drive up the cost of regular cars, these used cars that use, gasoline,
right,
and make it unaffordable for our low-income families. And that's the pathway out of poverty. You're also in states like mine in Nebraska, EVs don't really work well in rural areas. So you're going to tell rural folks they can't get to their jobs? I mean, this is just a horrible, horrible policy that is going to make it more expensive for our families in this country to be able to get by.
It's so short-sighted, and they don't consider the unintended consequences of pursuing these types of policies. Senator Pete Ricketts, thanks so much for taking time to join us today. Always good to talk with you.
Great. Thanks very much for having me on, Tony. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. We just need people who have common sense in government. All right. After the break, more Republican states have lined up to challenge the Biden administration's Title IX redefinition of sex. This is the good thing. This is why state elections matter. You get good people at the state, it's a check. It's our federalist system, keeping the federal government, at least attempting to keep them in check. We're going to talk with the Attorney General of my home state of Louisiana, Liz Merle, next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Let me again invite you to join us May the 19th, Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. We're hoping to see churches all across this country praying for Israel, for peace in Israel, that entire country. To be a part of it, simply text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, the list of Republican states preparing to challenge the Biden administration's recent rewrite of Title IX rules continues to grow. As yesterday, officials in my home state of Louisiana announced that they have filed a lawsuit against the Department of Education for these new regulations that redefine sex. Now, this comes as other red states file lawsuits of their own and have announced their schools will not comply with these measures that would redefine the category of sex as gender identity. Now, again, this is why elections matter. I know we focus a lot on the national elections, and we should, but state elections matter. And we've got good governors, we've got good lawmakers, and we've got good attorney generals that are fighting these regulations at the state level. Well, joining me now is one of these good state attorneys general, Louisiana's Attorney General Liz Merle. Liz, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Now, you said if these Title IX rules stand, they will be the very essence of Title IX and destroy decades of advances in equal educational opportunities, especially for women and girls. Tell us why you and Governor Landry are determined to stop this.
Well, Tony, you know, Title IX was signed by President Nixon in 1972 after examining finding pervasive discrimination against women in educational opportunities. And for 50 years, it's been enormously successful in providing and facilitating opportunities for women in equal measure with men in the biological sexes since. And so that law has been adopted and implemented for 50 years based on an assumption of biological gender. You simply cannot implement it. The gender identity definition is completely contradictory to any fixed biological gender. So you can't comply with these rules. You're damned if you do. You are damned if you don't. You know, if you do it, then you literally discriminate against the women in the very law that was created to protect women.
Which is
if
advanced.
If you don't do it, then...
It's advanced women's sports. It's given women a lot of opportunity in sports. It's created really a whole new industry of women's sports. But it's even more than that. And you talked about this yesterday, but tell our listeners about the practical effect that these rules would have day in and day out on students.
Well, I think that they're going to create this. They're going to turn education, I mean, all the way from kindergarten through, you know, high school through higher ed into a propaganda machine. You know, I mean, it's especially damaging, I think, with the youngest of our children, because they will grow up being taught to ask other children what their pronoun preferences are. And if they don't get that right, or if they disagree with it, let's just say that you've got a six-year-old or a five-year-old who just fundamentally doesn't really agree with it because they see natural differences between the sexes. And they're like, you're not a boy, you're a girl, or you're not a girl, you're a boy. That child can be punished. Any adult who doesn't punish or act on it can be punished. I mean, it is creating a punishment system for disagreeing with their gender ideology. And that is not what Title IX was ever meant to do. It was intended to create opportunities for biological women.
What happens to free speech?
It's gone in this process. There is no free speech.
Wow. So lay out for us the actions that you are taking on behalf of the citizens of Louisiana, of which I'm one.
Well, 13 minutes after the rule was published, I filed my lawsuit. Along with Mississippi, whose attorney general is Lynn Fitch, and she's been a great leader on this topic as well. Austin Knudsen from Montana and Raul Labrador from Idaho. So our and the Department of Education. So Cade Brumley in our Department of Education has also been a great leader on this, and he has advised all of our school districts not to comply, not to make any changes, because it exposes them to discrimination complaints if they comply.
Are you hopeful to get a favorable ruling out of the federal courts in Louisiana?
I am, and I know that there are a number of other states that are filing. Texas has filed. Alabama led a coalition of states, and some other organizations joined them in their lawsuit. And so I know that there will be more coming. You know, I think there will be a crush of lawsuits, and I'm confident that there will be an injunction that will be issued soon. The rule doesn't technically take effect till August 1st, but there's training and all kinds of other things that I think that have to start now. So I see no reason to wait for any of us to file for injunctive relief, because otherwise we would never be prepared to comply on August 1st.
Right, for the next school year. Attorney General Liz Merle, thank you so much for joining us today. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you. It's always great to be with you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
All right. Keep up the fight. All right. Coming up next, Congressman Chris Smith joins me after the break as we continue to track the World Health Organization's pandemic treaty, a.k.a. global power grab. They're hoping to finalize that next month when they meet in Geneva, Switzerland. So stay tuned for that discussion next on Washington Watch, and be ready because we'll have some action items for you as well. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. All right, again, let me encourage you, join us as we pray for and stand with Israel on May the 19th. To be a part of that, simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. Or go to prayandstand.com to find out more about being a part of that day. Our word for today comes from Judges chapter 6. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made for themselves the dens, the caves, and the strongholds, which are in the mountains. So Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Well, the rejection of God and his ways brought oppression, fear, and insecurity. The Israelites went from striking fear in the hearts of their opponents to hiding in fear wherever they could. Where there is spiritual compromise, there will soon be moral cowardice. Insecurity is a direct result of societal sin. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742 and join us on this journey. Well, we are less than a month away from the 77th World Health Assembly, where the World Health Organization looks to finalize a worldwide pandemic treaty, or accord as they're calling it, that would lead to the surrender of our national sovereignty to a corrupt global bureaucracy. Now, according to the WHO's communications, last week's meeting of the Working Group on Amendments to the International Health Regulations brought the organization closer to finalizing the agreement at the assembly next month. As we've pointed out many times, the process is fluid and I believe intentionally convoluted. Now, can we stop this global power grab? And if so, how? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Chris Smith. He is a senior member on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs and the chairman of the Subcommittee on Global Health, Global Human Rights, and International Organizations. He represents the 4th Congressional District of New Jersey. Congressman Smith, welcome back to the program. It's always great to have you on.
Tony, thank you so very much, and appreciate all that you do in FRC. It's amazing.
Chris, before we go to the WHO, this afternoon news broke that the House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, and other Democrats confirmed that Democrats in the House would not go along with a vote to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson that's been put forth by Marjorie Taylor Greene. Your reaction?
Well, I do hope that Marjorie Taylor Greene will be deferred from offering this. I mean, Mike Johnson is an extraordinarily noble man, a good man, a very effective, very smart. He's rising to the occasion of being Speaker. I don't think it was in his plans to do this anytime soon. And he did step up, and he's doing an extraordinary job under unbelievably hard circumstances. So, you know, I think it's, you know, I'm glad that the Democrats will not vote to throw him out of that position. I hope no Republicans do either. So maybe she'll defer it and not do it, or just give up that, which I think is a very, very bad path for her to follow.
So hopefully this could soon be in the rearview mirror and we could move on.
I hope so. I hope so. There's just so many pressing issues. We need to be unified as a party. We do have a good unity among the issues, particularly the moral issues. And I think that gets, you know, swiped by these kinds of shenanigans. Right. I don't think it's helpful. It's not healthy.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're right. I hope they move on from this. All right. Two days ago, WHO Secretary General Tedros Ghebreyesus was at the World Economic Forum, and he had this to say.
We're unprepared, and we're still vulnerable to the same problem. But the good news is, based on the lessons learned, we're building something. But we need to have a binding agreement in order to prevent or to early detect and respond in a better way.
Chris Smith, they're still scaring people trying to grab more power.
That's exactly what they're doing. You know, Tedros used the key word here, too. It's binding. It's as if this is an act of Congress. Treaty obligations are equivalent to any law. And the amount of money that will be required of the American taxpayer will be extraordinary vis-a-vis everyone else. You'll just look at the way we deal with the United Nations. We gave them $18 billion in 2022 under Biden. We were assessed $3 billion. We gave them $15 billion with a B on what they call voluntary contributions. $800 million of that went to the World Health Organization, over and above our $122 million assessment. I mean, this is, the taxpayer should not be fleeced like this. And again, we'll be told, according to the treaty itself, sometime in 2026, what our obligation will be in terms of financial. It is an affront to our sovereignty, where unelected bureaucrats will be dictating policy when it comes to vaccinations, therapeutics, and the like. And again, we're talking binding. There's even an article in here. It's called Article 18 about combating false, misleading, and disinformation. Who did more false and misleading and disinformation than the World Health Organization itself when it came to COVID-19? They did exactly what Xi Jinping, the Chinese dictator who put Tedros into that job, they did exactly what he wanted him to say. That is, the Communist Party, you know, dictated to him. This is a very, very dangerous loss of our sovereignty if it were to become a treaty to which we accede to.
Now, Chris, there's kind of two elements of this moving on parallel tracks. So there's the treaty, or what they call the accord. There's amendments to the current protocol that's in place. This has been a multi-year process. Is it accurate, as I described it, being a convoluted process that's hard to track, and that's intentional?
Oh, I think it's very intentional. It's a very closed process where like-minded people who are just going along, some of them, and others are being dictated to by the bureaucrats at WHO. They get text, they negotiate it, whatever that is. They get prescribed, this is what we want in there. And the draft treaty, as it has gone through iterations, the essential elements stay the same. For example, it calls for the continuation of essential health services. WHO, World Health Organization, defines essential health services to be abortion on demand. And there's no other organization on the face of the earth pushing harder to get every country in the world to allow unfettered access to abortion right up until the moment of birth without any kind of conscience protections for doctors or healthcare professionals. I mean, it's an all-out going for the juggler. And now this treaty, if it were to become in force, will require that abortion be a part of it. Where does abortion, which is a weapon of mass destruction, where does that come in as something that has to do with pandemics?
Right.
It's very, very troubling that they would look for every opportunity to integrate the abortion issue. And this is just another example of that.
Congressman Smith, you mentioned, yep, the pandemic accord. They've got abortion in there. But it appears from my reading of this that they can define a crisis, a health care crisis, a crisis of any kind. It's not just pandemics like we looked at COVID. It could be any number of things that they declare a global crisis on that would kick in the provisions.
Crisis. Exactly, Tony. A health crisis. They could be declaring, and again, they talk about there will be consultations with the countries in question. Good luck with that when bureaucrats with the force of international law are telling countries you must do this and you must do that. That's why it's such an invasion of sovereignty. Now, we think, and I think naively, that we can then push back on this. Look out for the lawsuits and everything else that will occur. And unfortunately, when you look at our own CDC, our own National Institutes of Health and others, they are all in with this groupthink about these health crises and that we're willing to, provide Tedros and his bureaucrats such authority. I think the authority on health should be local. There are times when it needs to be federal, but it needs to be local. You don't want this being usurped, that authority, by a global diplomat, so-called, who has no accountability whatsoever. There's none. They tell us what to do, and we say, yes, sir. Not in my time.
So, Congressman Smith, is the Biden administration basically keeping this under wraps until they've committed the United States to this binding agreement?
Well, you don't see many press conferences or press statements. Unfortunately, at press conferences, you don't hear, the White House being asked about it. I wish they would be with very specific questions, not some overall glib, yes, we all want to have a safer world. Well, of course we do. But Tedros has proven, and the World Health Organization has proven, especially with COVID, that they're not trustworthy. And that is very serious, that you can't. When they're prescribing a certain course of action, for instance, they may say that all the two-year-olds need to get a vaccination. When there's a lot of contrary data that says, they're not getting COVID, looking in the rearview mirror, do not vaccinate those kids. You don't know what complications that might have. Same goes for other young people, older than the two-year-olds. And many other countries, including in Europe, began to push back on these so-called recommendations, which are really, dictates to over-vaccinate, and again, with all these deleterious effects occurring to a large number of people. And then this whole idea of disinformation, I find that so every time some of the doctors and very, very thoughtful doctors would speak out, epidemiologists and others, they were completely brushed to a side. They were demonized by the press, the mainstream media, that is, and by so-called health officials
Had the White House pressuring social media to take off these individuals. Exactly. In fact, we were flagged. In fact, this program, what we're talking about right now, if this treaty were in effect, could be flagged for misinformation. So this is a serious threat.
Very
what
serious.
We saw during COVID, I mean, this is essentially COVID on steroids when you look at the WHO. And folks, I'm going to have some action items here for you in just a moment, but you can text WHO to 67742. That's WHO to 67742. Congressman Chris Smith, you've been around, you know, four decades working internationally. You know foreign policy issues. You know the United Nations. You know the World Health Organization. When you look at, with that frame of reference, when you look at this treaty that's being advanced, how serious of a threat is this on a scale of 1 to 10 and what you've seen in the past?
I would say 10. This is the kind of conveyance of the authority that should be left in the hands of us, elected officials, health professionals in the United States, with a robust debate as to what course of action should be pursued, and not handing it over to people who just will look at us and say, you do as I say. It's a matter of treaty. You are bound by this. It's a matter of law. And so I think this is a very, very serious next step towards having authority, almost a dictatorship of I mean,
this is kind of
by a certain group.
It's kind of like a one-world government. I mean, this is setting the stage for that. All right,
sure it is.
Chris Smith. Yeah. How do we stop it? We just got a few weeks before they meet in Geneva, Switzerland. What are the action steps here?
Well, I've gone to Geneva myself. I've lobbied with delegations and tried to point out the pitfalls. For some in the developing world, they see as this as a means to getting additional funding. You know, and if the American public wants to provide funding, and we are very generous, whether it be Ebola or COVID, then that should be a decision made by us and not by the WHO. Like I said, all of this kicks in terms of what our assessments are in 2026 after it's all signed, sealed, and delivered. I'm deeply concerned that the administration will use the very tricky and deceitful mechanism called an executive agreement as opposed to submitting it for ratification to the United States Senate, where a supermajority would have to vote for it if it is to come into force in the United States. It was used by the Obama administration on the nuclear deal with Iran, which is why, frankly, President Trump was able to come in and say that very flawed, egregiously flawed agreement with the mullahs in Tehran is not going to be enforced anymore because they never submitted it for ratification. But I'm very worried about him bypassing the advice and consent by the United States Senate in terms of a ratification vote. If it's so good, submit it for ratification. And there is a bill, H.R. 1425. Many of us have co-sponsored it that would say, you know, it does not come into force unless, and we want no part of this, unless it is submitted to ratification. And even there, it could be a big fight.
Right.
But we would welcome that because there's been no scrutiny of any kind of, you know, no focus, no scrutiny brought to bear on this. It's like groupthink, monolithic groupthink. Everybody just go along the way they did with Fauci for so long.
All right, Chris Smith, we've got that bill. Tom Tiffany, the author of that bill, you're a key co-sponsor of that H.R. 1425. Is that
25, yes.
All right, folks, we'll have that up on the website, as well as you can make comments during the comment period that ends this week with the Department of Health here in the United States. Simply text WHO to 67742. Chris Smith, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right, folks, again, you got to weigh in on this. Text the word WHO to 67742 and let your voice be heard in this matter. This is a serious threat to national sovereignty, but a bigger concern I have is that this is setting the stage for global governance. It's exactly what it is. It's conditioning us for that based upon threats and scaring us. All right, that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action,
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.